All you need to know is Jason's dead, right? Seeing his corpse ain't gonna stop the hallucinations.
Seeing it won't, but destroying it will.
Fuck you, Jason.
Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
Darren, we better turn around.
Why?
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
Might I have to go and dig up Jason?
Some folks have a strange idea entertainment.
There's this monster, and he was after me, and he wanted to kill me.
I'm a teenage Frankenstein, the local freak with a twisted mind. I'm a teenage Frankenstein.
Nikki, somebody's out there. What if it's that guy Jason?
I don't want to know.
No one in Forest Green wants to be reminded of what that maniac did here. That's why we changed the name.
I found what's left of those counselors, and it looks like someone did them in using Jason's old M.O.
Tommy, my father's out looking for you right now. Something happened tonight, and he's sure you're responsible for it.
You just found your friend Court and some girl. Her head was crushed in, and Court had a knife rammed to his skull.
No.
Tommy Jarvis is a psychopathic killer.
The only way now to stop Jason is to return him to his original resting place, where he drowned in
1957.
Hi, this is Russell Todd from Chopping Mall, He Knows You're Alone in Friday the 13th Part 2, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to this very special edition of The Hysteria Continues. Well, I'd say it's not very special, but it is very special because we have a special guest with us, and that's Michael Ferrari, a.k.a. Meep, from the Retro Movie Love podcast, who is a longtime friend of the show and loves Hysteria Continues and loves Jason Lives, the film we're covering this time, even more. It's so much so that he's got up at 5 a.m., to come on the show. So thank you for joining us at this godforsaken hour, Meep. How are you doing?
Hey there, thank you for having me. Well, at least some of you have had me.
Yes, well, Meep has seen behind the curtain, haven't you, Meep?
Oh God, yes I have. And
it's not pretty, is it?
It is 5 o'clock, so I might have to have some scotch. So, oh wait, not that 5 o'clock, so.
No, well, We usually have a kind of conversations on Messenger, Facebook Messenger, before the show to discuss, and usually it descends into Eric having a meltdown of some kind. So, Eric, are you still? You haven't tossed yourself off, have you? Or are you feeling any better?
Yes, I'm feeling much better. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're not going to have any meltdowns this time.
No, but I do. I want to ask Michael Ferrari, what drives you to get up at 5 a.m.?
Oh, my goodness. Is that your joke of the week?
No, I've got something even better for my joke of the week.
Well, that won't be difficult. So
that was a car joke. I know something about cars because I'm a boy.
Yes. Meep, I don't know if you want to dignify that with a response.
Well, with a name like Ferrari, I've heard every single variation of the car joke, so I'm used to it. Mr. Eric, I'll get my revenge.
Yes, well, okay, it is going to be one of those shows, but hopefully Skype seems to be behaving itself this time, so we can bring you Nathan as well. So how are you doing, Nathan?
I'm okay.
Good.
How are you?
I'm well, very well. It's very sunny here, actually. It's a beautiful sunny day for a change. So, but enough about the weather. It's a very British thing to talk about. But Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Well, I've already just said, but it's very sunny here, so thanks for asking.
Hey, Justin.
Yes.
How are you?
I am very well. It's very sunny here.
Justin, yeah, what's the weather like?
Well, I'm looking out the window at some twins.
Yeah, I was about to make the twin joke. Damn it.
Well, there you go. You've got to get up early.
It's barely light here. It just turned light, so it's not as early as Michael, but it's early.
I know. Well, you see, me and Eric have got the, you know, we can just, you know, saunter around, had a nice cooked breakfast this morning, watched a bit of TV, did a bit of research, had a few cups of coffee. You know, it's very civilized, but our American chums have it much harder, don't you? What?
Harder.
Eric. Right. Okay. Well, we are covering this because this is going out, hopefully, on Friday the 13th of February 2015. And, of course, we can only celebrate that by going back to 1986 for Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6, which I think is going to be an interesting choice because I think it there may be a messy split. Eric, what do you think?
I wasn't anticipating a messy split.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. But ahead of that, obviously, we've got the our usual things. We've got our Algonquin roundtable talk.
And yeah, actually, what? Still need reminding what Algonquin means.
Well, Nathan's your man for that.
I can Wikipedia because I'm not good at explaining these things. But it's I think it was the name of... Hang on just a second, and I'll tell you for sure. As Justin would say, before we start every podcast, talk amongst yourselves.
Well, yes. Well, we can talk about actually what we're going to be talking about in this mystery roundtable, which is actually to show that we do listen to your feedback. We are going to discuss slasher movie tropes, so the cliches of the slasher movie.
Okay. An Algonquin roundtable was a celebrated group of New York writers, critics, actors, you know, kind of upper class, and they met at this hotel called the Algonquin, and they had, you know, very, very, I would say, classy discussions, and it got known as the Algonquin roundtable.
So it's very apt for us, then.
Yes, it fits us 100%, I would say.
Well, me being British, obviously that kind of works. I'm not quite sure about the rest of you, but...
It just screams class.
Mm. Well, that's true. Was it Dorothy Parker was one of them?
I don't know who that is.
Was Jilly Cooper one of them?
No, Jennifer Jason Leigh played Dorothy Parker, who was in Eyes of a Stranger for that slasher movie.
Oh, yes. I love her in that movie. I just didn't know what her name was. Mm.
So, okay, well, we've got that coming up, and also some recently seen. But do we have any news about Gory Graduation and how the fundraising is going? Have you got anything? Because I know you were sold out of some of the perks. Is that right?
Yes, we sold out of the pick a film to cover on the podcast, but we initiated more, as it were, because it was so popular. It's going fairly well. We still have well over 50 days and still quite a lot of money to raise, but you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Okay, great. Well, if there's anybody wealthy out there, or even not wealthy, if you can throw a few bucks towards the Gory Graduation, that's definitely a good cause, because it's going to be a fun film, isn't it? It's a film bringing to life the urban legend of Gory Graduation, so I think it's going to be well worth watching, and we'll be getting updates regularly over the next coming months, so that's good. But recently seen, and Meep, as you are our guest host this week, do you want to regale us with what you've been watching recently?
Sure, I've been watching a few things lately. I've been prepping a podcast of my own focusing on winter horror movies. I've been watching quite a few movies set in the snow that are horror related, like Curtains. I know it's a favorite of you guys there. Mm-hmm. And The Boogans, a movie I really like a lot. I'm not sure if you guys are fans of The Boogans, but...
Oh, yeah. I love The Boogans. Yes.
Mm. Yes.
It's a lot of fun. And
I would agree as well.
And then stuff like John Carpenter's A Thing, which is obviously one of the seminal movies set in the snow, and several other movies that kind of fall in line with that. So I'm going to save that for that podcast. But I've also, my wife and I have been binge watching The Fall.
Oh, right.
The TV British series.
Yeah.
The British TV series. Mm. Has anyone else seen that?
Yeah. No. Sorry.
It's about a serial killer in Ireland, and Gillian Anderson is the cop called in from England to kind of crack the case. And it's not a very long series. I think it's run two seasons so far, and there's maybe about six episodes in each season. So it's not very long, like a lot of the good British shows. They don't wear out their welcome. and it's really good. I was kind of surprised that I liked it as much as I did. I think the actor who plays the serial killer, because of his performance in this, was cast in that 50 Shades of Grey movie that everyone's talking about now, of course.
So sexy.
But he's actually really good in this movie. He's really TV show rather. He's really intense, and I could kind of see why they cast him. And of course, Gillian Anderson is a favorite of mine on The X-Files, and I think she's a great actress in her own right. And she's really good on the show and an interesting character, kind of like the flip side of the Silence of the Lambs character, where she was kind of a bit weak and had to come into her own. This one's pretty strong off the bat, and she's very intimidating to a lot of people, and she's great to watch and a really good show. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix.
Check it out. Is this better than the Following with Kevin Bacon? Because that show's pretty terrible, but it sounds similar.
I haven't seen that show, though it sounded interesting when the idea of it was initially interesting. But TV shows in America, generally, unlike the stations like Fox and ABC and so on, just don't really hold my interest past one or two episodes. But this one, it plays out kind of like a mini series more than a TV show, because it's one storyline really, and it definitely captures your interest. But if anyone tells me otherwise about that Kevin Bacon show, I will watch it, just because Kevin Bacon, anything horror related, is pretty cool. Also, I've been watching just random things. Hatchet 3, finally caught up with that one. And honestly, it was better than Hatchet 2, but I was pretty bored, like I was with Hatchet 2. I just kind of tuned out after a while. Not a big fan of the Hatchet series. And then not really horror related, but sort of horror related. I think Joseph might be a fan of this movie, Avenging Force.
Oh, yes.
On Blu-ray. Hunting Humans movie with Michael Dudikoff, who I like a lot. And Michael Dudikoff strangely reminds me of Tom Matthews in a way.
He looks identical to Tom Matthews, actually.
Very similar guys. And I think, for some reason, Michael Dudikoff for me is pretty underrated. And this movie in general is pretty underrated. I thought it was overlooked when it came out. But I think it's a lot of fun. And even fans of slasher movies might enjoy it, the hunting humans aspect of it. And worth seeing.
It's very, for a canon action film from the 80s, it's very, I want to say, grim in some of the things that happen. I won't spoil it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah.
Especially at the farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The set pieces are mounted really well.
Yeah.
By the filmmaker. I think it's Sam Furstenberg who helmed some fun canon movies like Break In 2 and I believe he did Ninja 3 The Domination. So, I
know Break In 2 is not its proper title. You have to say it properly.
Break In 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
Which the title is better than the actual movie.
No, the title's as good as the movie.
I wish that was true, but I remember we talked about Break-In on our dance movies podcast.
Yes.
I think Break-In 1 and 2 were filmed back-to-back, and I think Break-In 1 got all the good stuff, honestly. So, but 2 is a great title. That's pretty much what I've been watching.
Well, that's good. I have actually seen both All of the Fall and All of the Following. So I can compare them. They're like Joseph, they're chalk and cheese, is completely different. They're nothing like it. The Fall is very serious, and quite sort of dour, but quite a bit like The Killing. It's a bit more like that kind of tempo. Have you seen both of the series, Meep? Have you watched both seasons?
Yeah, we binge watched all of it in a day or two, and it was it's pretty good doing it that way, because it is, like I said, it's like a series, like a mini series or a movie. You just kind of follow the storyline. So it works really well that way.
Yeah, and I really like The Following as well. I mean, they're completely different. I mean, The Following is really, really silly and really stupid, but it's very entertaining. It's more like a slasher movie, more like a cheesy slasher movie, whereas The Fall is more like a serious slasher movie, although it's not really a slasher movie thing, but I don't know if you're in the mood for the following is episodic. You know, it's trouble with a lot of American TV, especially ones where you can endless season series is, although you have a series arc, more so than you did maybe in the '80s, but it tends to be kind of very episodic. Each episode is almost a repeat of the one before. And that's the problem I had with something like Hannibal. Again, that wasn't, I kind of gave up on that. But actually, the following is silly enough, I think, to be worthy of your time. But I'd recommend both of them. So, Eric, have you not seen The Fall?
No, I'm not a big TV watcher, I'm afraid.
Okay, it's worth a watch. It's definitely, he's very good in it, you know, considering how good looking he is, and he plays quite a scuzzy character. So he manages to pull that off. But thank you, Meep. So
I think he'll be doing plenty of that in 50 Shades of Grey as well.
I imagine he will, yes. But it's a little bit odd, actually, because he's playing a scuzzy serial killer who ties up women and rapes them. No, doesn't rape them, but he murders them. And in 50 Shades of Grey, he plays a man who ties up women and doesn't kill them. So maybe a bit of typecasting there, perhaps.
Yeah.
But no, well, thank you, Meep. That was good. But Joseph, how about you? What have you been watching?
I haven't really been watching anything this week. They forced me to work this week to fill in for someone. So I've worked like 9 days straight and it's been very busy. So no TV watching.
Well, that's fair enough. And also as I think we said last time, we're recording, a week. It's only been a week since we recorded last. So there's not been much time to watch things. So, Nathan, how about you? Have you managed to catch anything?
Yes, I watched the Town That Dreaded Sundown remake. I enjoyed it. I'd say I liked it for the most part. I will say that I think I liked the first half more than the second half. Because the first half, I thought, they did a really good job with the cinematography and the story kept me really interested. You know, I loved some of the death scenes, you know, and... there's a gay couple in the movie, and I love the way they handled the gay couple. It was done like, you know, they were just normal. You know, it wasn't like the fact that they were gay was a big deal. You know, the movie didn't make it a big deal. It was just, I mean, it could have been any couple, you know, getting stalked at this, you know, like junkyard area. So I thought it was interesting how they handled that. And I think my biggest issue is the ending. I don't know. I mean, I just didn't think it quite lived up to the rest of the film. It kind of turned into, I don't know, Scream. It felt like a Scream sequel by the time the ending got here, whereas the rest of the movie didn't really feel that way to me. And, you know, I mean, not that that's a bad thing. You know, I love the Scream movies. But, you know, it just, you know, I just felt like the first half and second half didn't really mesh very well together. But overall, I would give it, you know, probably a 6 out of 10. Definitely worth watching. And I enjoyed it.
Has anyone else caught that? Because I caught it.
Yes, I caught it too.
I did too as well, yeah.
I'm the only one who's yet to watch it, but I will.
Okay. What did you think, Eric?
Yeah, I was kind of impressed, but overall I was a bit iffy about the film. Nathan was saying he got, by the end of the film, he thought he'd watched a Scream sequel, and I got that impression right from the very start. What I did like was the way that they incorporate the original film into this, quote, remake. They acknowledge that the film exists, and in fact, one of the plot points is that they go in search of some of the filmmakers to try and get some more clues as to what might be going on. That bit was quite clever, I thought. The murders are quite vicious in places. They reminded me of the David Fincher film Zodiac at times. But I did get the feeling overall that I was watching a sort of Scream clone. And I'm not that pushed on Scream, the series. I'm much more of a I Know What You Did Last Summer fan when it comes to, quote, trendy horror. But it's extremely well made and far better than I anticipated. Because the original is, you know, not the greatest film in the world to start with anyway. It's good. Would I recommend it? Yes, especially if you're a fan of Scream, I'd give it a big thumbs up. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. Meep, have you seen it?
I did see it, and like Nathan, I liked the first half, but then the movie just kind of, I felt like it was just letting me down after that. I don't know, just a lot of characters doing stupid things, and especially characters who are just running around the streets screaming and getting killed, but no one in this town hearing them. I just thought it was just so far from removed from reality that it took me out of it for some reason. I just couldn't get into it. And the ending, yeah, wasn't a fan of the ending at all.
Okay.
But it had some good things about it. It just kind of lost me, okay. Sadly.
That seems to be the consensus from what I've heard. Although, to be honest, I think I probably liked it more than anyone else. It'd be interesting to see what Joseph thinks about it. But I really liked it. I think because I'd had a few glasses of wine, I know a shock.
What?
I know.
Shock, horror.
By halfway point, I think I quite enjoyed the way it played out. But I think I may have been slightly lubricated by that point, as it were. Eric. God, it's like having Beavis and Butthead on the show, all rolled into one. But I liked it. I thought I was actually surprised when I started watching it. That opening scene in the drive-in was obviously there was a lot of money behind that film, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's what I got the impression of as well. A big crane shot over the screen of the drive-in, and
I mean, cinematography is incredible for what you would presume is a relatively or a lower or medium budget film, but it looked like not, you know, as high budget as you get for maybe for like a, you know, slasher movie. Only saying that when we're talking about not having spacecraft and big explosive special effects, but you know, a lot of people in it and very, very well shot. And it's very stylized, and I thought it's done in the, and I thought it was very clever. But yes, I think the vino might have helped.
It wasn't. I don't think it was popcorny enough for me, which is something we'll get onto probably when Jason Lives. It wasn't a fun movie to watch.
Okay.
For me, fair although enough. It is a good movie.
Yeah. Well, it's better than, I mean, a lot of remakes, isn't it? I mean, if you look at something like the Prom Night remake, or I mean, I enjoy the My Bloody Valentine remake quite a lot. But if you look at something like the Friday 13th remake, that's, you know, a perfect example of making a not very fun horror movie. Whereas
I still want to see the Prom Night remake.
What, are you sure?
I mean, it's one of those things I feel like I need to watch it since everybody else has seen it.
If anyone is going to like it, it's going to be Nathan.
Yes.
Well, that'll be how we figure out if I, you know, if I like it or not, if it's a good movie or not. Because if I like it, it's a good movie. But if I don't, then it's not.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because it was like like Freaky Friday, isn't it? Because I liked The Town That Dreaded Sundown down more than Nathan, so it's like Freaky Friday.
It is
true, but I still liked it, just not as much as you.
Okay,
did.
Fair enough. Now I'm trying to remember where we're up to because Joseph and who haven't we spoken to now?
Me.
Eric, okay,
yeah, that's good. Well, as it's only been a week since we last recorded, the only thing I watched really was The Town That Dreaded Sundown remake, mainly because you guys were talking about it. I said I should possibly catch up so I'd have something to talk about. Yes, so nothing else, unless you want to include Where the Bears Are, series 3.
No, it's okay.
It's not porn.
is it a nature documentary?
No, it's a... It's a web series, but they released it as a feature film length DVD then, and it's got lots of nice looking creatures in it.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, if there's nobody stabbing people with things.
Actually, there is the within the movie there. One of the bears gets a part in a slasher movie.
Okay, right.
And the killer actually wears a sack over his head, like in The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Well, there you go.
Yes, with hilarious consequences.
I bet. Okay, well, thank you, Eric. Sorry, we've had a little bit of a Skype crap out, and it cut us off for about 5 minutes, so that's why I've lost my train of thought. But so we've spoken to Joseph and Eric. Nathan, did we speak to you, didn't we? Yes, you said Town of Dreaded Sundown, didn't you? Hello?
Nathan? Hello?
Oh, I'm still here. Sorry, there was a plane flying over, so I muted my phone.
Okay.
I'm trying to, you know, make this seem like a very professional podcast, so no airplanes will be in the background.
Yeah, it's going to take more than that. It's going to take more than that.
It only took 90-something episodes.
Well, episode 95 we are up to. But Nathan, have you said everything you wanted to say?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything else. I mean, I just rewatched The Guest is all, okay. And we already talked about it.
Fair enough. Okay. Well,
what does Meep think of The Guest? Have you seen The Guest?
That'd
Meep?
Be interesting.
I have, and it's my favorite movie of last year by far.
Okay.
Love The Guest.
Mine too. Excellent film.
It's the most entertaining movie I've seen in years, honestly.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a strong recommendation, if I've ever heard it. But, as I say,
And Meep likes Dirty Dancing as well, so his opinion are really valid. You do like Dirty Dancing.
I do. Yeah, well, I'm not afraid to admit that.
Okay.
Well, I also like a lot of scotch, so there you go. I'm not that sure if that's a coincidence or not, but there it is.
I'll put in the tumbleweed sounds whenever you mention Dirty Dancing again, Eric.
Nobody parks Ferrari in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Ha ha.
I haven't seen very much actually, apart from again we saw Tanned Dread Sundown. We did. We've been sort of binge watching True Detective. See that.
Oh God!
What?
I hate that show.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh God! What? It bored me so bad. Like I tried to stick with it. I really did.
Mm.
I tried to stick with it, but I was so bored that about halfway through, I said, "You know, I'm not going to finish it."
I thought it was really good. It did annoy me. I thought it was especially the mumbling. There was lots of wah, 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 you know. It's just like speak up for Christ's sake. It's not, you know. But it was it kind of the longer it went on, the more it went into horror territory, which surprised me. I didn't realize it was going to do that because it
maybe I
didn't
give it long enough.
Well, it sort of starts with all the kind of the typical kind of, you know, Seven type, you know, or Hannibal style murders. And then you've got all the cop stuff. But as the further it goes on, the more kind of macabre and horror related, I kind of guess it gets when it gets to the end. It's you know, without giving it away, I would say it's very much got one foot in the horror genre by the end of it. Has anyone else seen it?
I have as well.
Hmm. Would you agree? Did it sort of? Do you think it kind of moved more in that direction towards the end?
I really, really like the show. It does start out slow. I wasn't crazy about the ending. I thought it kind of, you know, when they finally get into the whole explanation behind everything, I just thought it was kind of mundane. But I really liked it. Once you get past kind of the slow build up, and I especially loved the tracking shot in the I think it's the fourth or fifth episode where Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are going through that raid in the crack house. Mm. It's just like one of the best moments in TV I've seen in a long time.
Mm. That was quite spectacular. Well, not spectacular, but incredibly well done, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Mm. What about you, Meep? Were you a fan?
I haven't finished it because I got really bored while watching the show. There's definitely some good elements to it, like you guys have pointed out, some good TV there. But I think the problem with the show for me is that the actors are really, really hammy in it. Both Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. I just feel like there's scenes where there's endless scenes of them talking and rambling and lots of close-ups, and I just feel like the show caters a little bit too much to the acting over everything else, that it kind of loses it. But I think there's some good atmosphere in the show, some genuine atmosphere, but I don't know, I just got really bored because of that element. I'm not big on shows where it's about actors chewing the scenes, really. I kind of like the when it's a good story that gets me involved, and I think the show kind of loses that a bit along the way. But if it gets better as it goes along, I would definitely pick it up again at some point. But while watching it with my wife, we just got kind of bored.
Sadly. It's got a lot of praise. I wouldn't give it as much praise as like a lot of people, but if you can get past a few of those little kind of bugaboos, it really does like pick up a lot of steam. I would say about halfway through.
Cool.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't make it to the halfway point of the show. I mean, I just kind of got, you know, I mean, I was bored, you know, for a little bit, and you know, people said, you know, try to stick with it, and I did, but I don't know, it just didn't really stick with me, I guess. I mean, it's just one of those shows that you either like it or you don't.
It's a bit like The Wire. It's one of those very, very slow burns that really pays off towards the end. Although this one doesn't quite pay off as much as something like The Wire, but it's a lot like that.
Cool. Okay. Well, One last thing I was going to mention, and it's not slasher related but horror related, is that there's been a lot of talk about the Poltergeist remake trailer this week. Has anyone seen the trailer?
Yes.
Mm. And I've seen a lot of people saying that it just looks like a typical FX fest, blah, blah, blah. But they, to my mind, they seem to be missing the point that the original Poltergeist was hardly The Haunting or yeah. You know, it was the original Poltergeist was just full-on FX fest, wasn't it?
Completely.
So I just wonder what people's thoughts were. It looks like they're going for more of they're borrowing from things like The Conjuring and all the recent kind of Insidious style, Annabelle, all that kind of stuff, which not necessarily a bad thing. But is anyone else interested in watching the remake?
I am. Yes. I'm probably the only person in the world who doesn't really rate the original Poltergeist that highly. I think, as you say, it's just an assault of special effects that just becomes meaningless by the end, and it goes on way too long, I think. I'm much more of a fan, and this is quite controversial, of Poltergeist 2 and 3, which are shorter and pithier and sillier and more fun, I think.
I'm a bigger fan of Housegeist.
Oh.
What? Not.
I think you should have played the Tumbleweed and the Bells for Joseph.
Nathan would agree
with me.
Yes, I would. Mm. I love Housegeist. It's a great movie.
Oh, there is a movie.
It's the alternate title for Boarding House.
Oh.
Rent will kill you, but something else will.
Oh, I do prefer Housegeist then as well.
Well, there you go. So, what about you, Meep? Are you looking forward to the Poltergeist remake?
I'm a huge, huge fan of the original Poltergeist. One of my favorite horror movies. One of my favorite Spielberg movies ever as well. I know...
Tobe Hooper.
I know it's been a source of contention among fans, but honestly, I've had a lot of debate and discussion about this fact, but Spielberg did direct Poltergeist. People need to really understand that. He just didn't take credit. He was doing the studio a favor. He made Poltergeist. Tobe Hooper did not work out for very specific reasons, which I won't get into on this podcast. But yes, I love Poltergeist. Huge fan. And I don't think the special effects fest that it does become in the movie really bombards the film. I think because the movie is such a slow burn up until that point, I think that it becomes very special effects-y. I don't think it hurts the movie at all. Part two does, though. I think the special effects in part two don't really work. But part three, which I'm also a big fan of, uses the special effects in an interesting way because they're all in camera effects rather than matte paintings and all the other kind of work that they did on part two and even part one. But I love Poltergeist and I hold in really high regard. And the trailer, I honestly, for the new one, looks like it's going to really let me down because they kind of just throw everything at you instead of kind of teasing you with what could happen in the movie. So you kind of get a sense with that new trailer, at least the trailer that I've seen, just that you know what they're going to do with the movie instead of surprise you. But hopefully that isn't the case because the actors in the movie, Sam Rockwell and Rosemary DeWitt, are really good actors. And I think they would make a good couple for the Freelings. Unfortunately, the trailer, though, kind of makes me think that it's going to be otherwise. But
it's always difficult with a trailer, isn't it? Because a trailer, you can cut a trailer for, you know, they sometimes get when they cut like romances to look like romance films or romantic comedies to look like horror movies, they do like a horror movie trailer from something. So it's you know, and like I say, I can't imagine Sam Rockwell would sign up for a really shitty remake. I wouldn't have thought anyway. But
I do miss, as Meep was saying, the lost art of a cryptic trailer, and I think Jason Lives has got a great teaser trailer that goes with it. I'm not going to use it on this podcast. As I was saying to you, I found a TV spot because the teaser trailer had no dialogue, but I thought it was atmospheric and eerie. And if I was watching that back in cinemas in early 1986, I think I would have been really excited, even though the trailer doesn't give anything away.
They were really good with some of the Friday ones, wasn't they? Because the Jason Takes Manhattan teaser trailer
exactly.
with New York playing, is it New York playing in the background?
Yeah.
So, yeah. it's kind of very witty, kind of carried on that kind of wittiness from part six. But yes, we will be coming on to our feature presentation very shortly. But before we do that, Nathan, do you want to tell us what your is going to be on your algorithm table?
Algorithm?
Yeah.
My Algonquin round table. Mm-hmm. And this was written in, I think, the last episode by a listener who wanted us to cover, you know, what we thought made a slasher movie. The slasher movie troops, as Justin would say.
Tropes.
Tropes, yes.
Yes.
And really, I think we could just open it up for discussion because, I mean, you guys know that my idea of it, of a slasher movie is very vast and goes well beyond what Eric thinks is a slasher movie, obviously.
Obviously.
But to me, I don't know. I mean, I just to me, I love the idea of a group of people in a secluded location getting picked off one by one. To me, that is enough to call it, you know, maybe not, you can't say it's a slasher, but to me, it's, it has like the trappings of a slasher, I guess I should say. Hmm. But I'd be very curious to hear what our guest thinks about this. Meet.
Let's see, slasher movie. I like Linda in Halloween and Darcy DeMoss in Friday the 13th Part 6. Some of the girls. Oh, no, not slasher movie tramps. Slasher movie tropes. Okay. I agree. There, people getting picked off in creative ways in 80s slasher movies. That's some of my favorite tropes, with different weaponry sometimes, like the Friday the 13th series does. Sometimes obscured masked killer, I think, is a good slasher movie trope. I like the element of mystery in slasher movies. I like sleuthing that some of the final girls do in these movies. I think that's cool. And having a final girl, I guess, in a slasher movie is also a trope as well. There's just so many. I mean, you can go on and on.
Yeah, I agree. Final girl. I love final girls in slasher movies.
Mm. I guess it all kind of starts with like the Agatha Christie kind of thing, like the 10 little Indians, just people just dying off and one by one, not usually in groups in slasher movies, although the movie we're going to talk about has more than one person getting killed at a time for Friday the 13th Part 6. But yeah, just one by one, people getting picked off, that essential idea, and then all these other little things, like these little things we love in slasher movies, those tropes.
Yeah. I'd say that essentially, yes. Joseph.
Well, I think you have to have a good chase scene as evidenced in something like Prom Night, where Wendy gets chased around the school. I think any slasher movie worth its salt would include some kind of, you know, protracted chase scene. That's a good trope to have. I would also say the kind of the My Bloody Valentine type backstory of like a legend or a campfire tale, as it were. I think that's a good trope to have. Those are definitely requisite in my mind for not all slasher movies have those, but those are, you know, kind of requisites in my opinion that, you know, kind of make up, you know, the better of the bulk of slasher films. And of course, you know, three of you might disagree with me here, but at least ample female nudity, which is kind of a staple. I would say that's a good trope to have.
Oh yes.
See, this is why I like having Meep and Johnny on the show, because I finally have someone to call my own.
Oh,
I didn't think you'd be shallow enough to be craving after boobies in a movie. I've obviously overestimated you.
Talk well, about shallow.
At least I'm not craving after hairy backs.
That's a good retort. Touché.
Touché, turtle.
All right. How about you, Justin?
I think it's eternally interesting. This was in a kind of nerdy, kind of geeky kind of way, but. The thing that annoys me when people talk about slasher movies is if they sometimes, the people who say Dawn of the Dead is a slasher movie, like the original Dawn of the Dead, things like that. And sometimes The only time it annoys me when people, films that are patently just horror movies that got no slasher elements at all in them, that they call them slasher movies, like Dawn of the Dead or Hellraiser and things like that. That's patently ridiculous. But I'm much more forgiving when it comes to looking at films that certainly borrow from the slasher movie. And I think there really is no defined, clear line. You could write a manifesto for the slasher movie. But it's, you know, one of the things actually that you could do, and I think it's I listen to Jalo Chow Chow, the Jalo podcast, and one of the co-hosts on there runs a website called I think it's Jalo Score, and what he does is he takes all the tropes of the Jalo and marks them and then gives them a percentage point. So for instance, if there's an amateur detective, or if there's a black glove killer, and all of these, if there's a plane that flies, you know, an international travel log, all those kind of things, he'll give them points. And so that's a way of scoring to show what is the most giallo-esque of movies, of all the giallo movies. And you could do that with a slasher movie. You could do all sorts of things like, is there a 10 years later? Is there an isolated setting? Was there an accident that's caused this, is there a mystery killer, all these kind of things. You could do that to find what is the perfect slasher movie, but ultimately whether that would be the case, I don't know, because I'd still think Halloween is the perfect slasher movie, and I don't know whether or not how highly that would score on that. So, but that's why I think I don't see a problem with us occasionally having films which don't necessarily fall in within the rigid criteria of the slasher movie rules, because I think sometimes it opens it up for a more interesting discussion. And I mean, certainly in the last couple of weeks, there was on one of the Facebook groups that I sometimes post or keep an eye on, it's the kind of there was a discussion about whether or not Suspiria was a giallo. And although I don't really think Suspiria is a giallo exactly, it's got a lot of the giallo aspects. You know, it's got the amateur detective, it's got the mystery killer, it's got all these things that the giallo, and it follows on from Argento's gialli. But people got really, really upset about people calling it a giallo. And I think, you know, people just need to chill out a little bit. You know, nobody's going to die if someone calls Suspiria giallo, or if Nathan picks, I don't know, Breakfast at Tiffany's as a giallo or a slasher movie, it's not the end of the world. But
I wish it was a slasher movie.
Yes.
Kill Audrey Hepburn, please.
Yeah. Well, somebody already has. But so I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing, and I think it's an interesting talking point, and there are lots of tropes for the slasher movie, and a lot of them we just discussed now, but I think I'm quite happy for us to veer a little bit off task occasionally, because I think it'll keep the show as fresh
and we are next episode veering off quite well. I wouldn't say quite off the beaten path, but I guess you'll see.
I'd say quite. Yeah, quite.
I would say quite, yes.
I'm not sure how you're going to show that Can't Stop the Music is a slasher movie, Joseph, but there you go. So, are we anything else left to say, Nathan?
Well, Eric still has to give his.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I think every slasher movie needs two demonically possessed old ladies running around a mansion. And if a slasher movie doesn't have that, then it's not a slasher movie. Isn't that right, Nathan?
Oh.
You are totally 100% correct.
You know, until I started on this podcast, for me, a slasher movie was in its, you know, I was very strict about what was a slasher movie, and it was things that were Friday the 13th or Halloween clones, unseen killers or mask killers with knives or chainsaws or machetes, you know, going around the woods or, you know, whatever sort of secluded location they've, you know, picked up on. Since being on the podcast, I mean, Joseph has controversially picked Predator, which, when if you go down to the basics, it is about a masked killer, because after all, the Predator is wearing a mask, is a masked killer in the woods. Rabid Grannies, I'm still stumped on as to why that was included as a slasher film, but I'll let you away with it. As Justin says, I mean, it, it you know, we do need to open up the parameters slightly, or else we will eventually run out of films. Probably. Well, we probably won't, but it gives us an opportunity to cover some films that we would like to by shoehorning them in.
Fair enough. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, obviously some stuff there's no way we could twist into being a slasher, but, you know, with something like Rabid Grannies, it's the whole they're getting picked off one by one in a castle. So, I mean, I kind of give it leeway for that. Of course, now, I really think Joseph's next pick is going to be the one where, you know, I just don't see it at all. But I'm more really so excited than to cover it.
I think it's more so than Rabid. I would say it's more of a slasher than Rabid Grannies.
Yes.
But, I mean, there is one of my...
I think you guys are trying to mess with me.
We're not. I honestly believe that's the truth.
Well, we're going to see next time, aren't we?
Yeah.
And we'll be announcing that at the controversial pick at the end of the show. So hold on to your hats.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, can I add one last trope that I love that we didn't mention? Bitchy characters. Got to have a bitchy character.
Oh, yeah. Love them.
Goodness.
Love those.
Of which I don't think there is one in Jason Lives, is there?
There isn't. There is a feisty character, but there isn't a bitchy character.
And there's no big wobbly tits either.
No. But we can talk about that. But it's also it makes up for it, doesn't it, in part 7 with Melissa.
Oh yeah, in spades.
Oh yes, yes. Mm.
So, Nathan, are we talked out of your...
I think so.
Argon roundtable. So,
yeah. Argon. Yeah, that's a good one.
Shall we move on to the feature presentation, as we're now talking about boobs and bitches? Friday 13th, part 6. So, here is the TV spot for 1986's Jason Lives, Friday 13th. Friday the 13th. I've got to put my teeth back in. Friday the 13th, part 6. Jason Lives.
They thought the nightmare was dead and buried. They were wrong. Jason Lives.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, part 6. Jason Lives, rated R.
Starts Friday, August 1st at a theater near you.
As a child, Tommy Jarvis did what many others died trying to do. He killed Jason Voorhees, the mass murderer who terrorized the residents of Crystal Lake. But now, years later, Tommy is tormented by the fear that maybe Jason isn't really dead. So Tommy and a friend go to the cemetery to dig up Jason's grave. Unfortunately for Tommy, and very unfortunately for his friend, instead of finding a rotting corpse, they discover a well-rested Jason who comes back from the dead for another bloody rampage in... Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives. Okay, Jason Lives has always been a movie that I've, you know, I've liked it, not as much as the first 5, but I always got, you know, a lot of enjoyment out of it. But watching it again this week, you know, to cover on the podcast, I was actually struck by how well directed this film is and how well shot it is. And, you know, I've always noticed, you know, that in, you know, a few of the Friday the 13th films, but it really stands out here. I think the cinematography behind this is really well done. Lots of, you know, wind in the trees from far, far away and, you know, zooming through the woods, with Jason, you know, kind of just stomping around. And, the one thing I do like about Jason Lives is that they tried to take a basically a silly premise and turn it into like a pseudo serious kind of a thriller, as it were, with a kind of comedic, like tongue in cheek moments, you know, none more so than the scenes where, like, say, Jason throws a paintballer into a tree and he leaves a smiley face, kind of like ha ha humor like that. I like the, Tom Matthews as Tommy Jarvis. I thought that he's did a really good job. I used to kind of prefer John Shepard as the kind of hulking, silent, you know, flip his lid at any moment, Tommy Jarvis. But I think I liked Tom Matthews' portrayal, you know, better after watching it again this week. He's kind of got that nervous energy where, you know, he's worried, kind of, you know, running around trying to stop the Frankenstein monster, as it were. I thought he did a really good job here. I think one thing missing from Jason Lives is a final girl, as it were, because Tommy's more of a final boy. And, you know, towards the end, his little gal pal, Megan, kind of, you know, steps up to the plate a little bit, but not quite as much as I would want. Because, you know, like we were talking with tropes, you got to have a final girl or else it's kind of a little bit off the beaten path. Let's see. I like Martin, the caretaker. I love his little song when he's stumbling drunkenly through the woods. I'll take you home again, Kathleen. Tony Goldwyn in a very small role, one of his first. I thought that was amusing. And of course, Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives features... Oh, God, it features my all-time biggest crush, which is Darcy DeMoss, in a unfortunately clothed sex scene, but an amusing sex scene with John Travolta's, I think it's his cousin or his nephew, in an RV. And I think she gets one of the best death scenes in the series, getting her face slammed into, like, the backside of a mirror, and you see the mold from the plastic, you know, kind of contort to her face. But, you know, there's a lot more to say about it. But for now, we'll turn it over to our guest, Michael.
I love, love, love Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. No surprise to anyone here. I don't know. I think part of it was my childhood experience. I saw this movie in the theater when it came out. Did anyone else see this one theatrically?
No.
Yes. No.
So that's a yes from Joseph.
Okay. Yes.
So, you know, growing up in the 80s, I mean, one of the best things about growing up in the 80s was growing up and knowing that there was going to be a Friday the 13th movie that year, possibly. And there was so much anticipation with that. I mean, it was usually summer when they came out, I want to say, or just when there was a Friday the 13th, actually. It was usually on that day, but I don't think this one actually came out on Friday the 13th. But that summer, I was waited all summer. It came and finally came in August. And I didn't have to convince my grandmother to go see this movie because she loved horror movies. She was a big fan of horror movies. And we went with her. And I think she took along a friend of hers, which is interesting. And my younger sister, we went to the Low State Theater in Times Square. And for years and years, I thought that I saw this movie as a double feature with The Karate Kid Part 2. But after watching this movie this week, I remembered I actually saw it as a double feature with Running Scared, that Billy Crystal, Gregory Hines movie, and which I thought was a lot of fun as well. So I saw it as a double feature with that in Times Square, and I just fell in love. It was in a big theater, kind of an old theater, but it just, that experience was one of my favorite movie going experiences, just watching a Friday the 13th movie in a theater. And when Jason came, and, you know, Part 5 was a big disappointment for a lot of us because Jason was not, as big spoiler alert, you guys covered Friday the 13th Part 5, but Jason's not in that movie, and it's a fake Jason. And when I saw Part 5 in the theater in Times Square, people booed when it wasn't fake, when it wasn't really Jason. One big black guy in the audience said, "What is this shit?" when Jason was revealed. And I very much remember that. So that was my favorite experience of seeing Part 5, just that piece alone. But Part 6, everyone was just so into this movie because Jason was back finally. And yes, he becomes zombie Jason right away in the beginning. But that's kind of the fun of it. You get to have that fun. Jason's reanimated. Jason's back. He seems unstoppable. He's even more strong and more powerful than ever before. He's crushing people's heads and pulling them off left and right. Just that.
I know. I didn't want to laugh as he was our guest, but I have to. Sorry.
Thank you.
It took me a long time to get all that in there.
A bit.
Yay, got my own. And yes, there's a lot of elements of this movie that bring me to it. I think a lot of it, like Joseph mentioned, is because of Tom McLaughlin's direction. He wrote and directed this movie, which is unique in the slasher films of that period. I think a lot of them were written by somebody else and then gone through like several drafts and then they become something else and then directed by somebody else. But he had a vision for this movie, and you could see that he has a gothic kind of sensibility in trying to bring some of his favorite movies to the screen. And trying to recall some of them, like the Frankenstein movies and the Universal horror movies of past, and kind of inject that into the series. So there's kind of a unique perspective on the Friday 13th series. And given that this is number 6 in a series, which usually means it's pretty stale by then, like especially when you look at series in the like the Saw series and other franchises, like usually around part 6 is pretty stale. But I think Part 6 is pretty refreshing. It's a lot of fun. There's just definitely a sense of humor in this movie that wasn't in some of the other entries. But I think that it makes a good complement to some of the menace and set pieces and scares that are in the movie. Actually, while watching this movie last night with my wife, we have a new baby, and she was being our new baby while watching the movie. And she literally jumped out of her seat during one of the scenes. And the poor baby couldn't enjoy her meal properly while watching Friday 13th Part 6. But there's definitely some scares and fun in there for those looking for that, and some humor and a lot of other little bits. I think this movie is full of interesting details that some of the other movies in the series didn't have, and fun camera work. And Jason wears a utility belt. That's weird. Why does he wear a utility belt? Suddenly he has a utility belt. I don't remember having one in the other films, but that's kind of interesting. I don't know. I just had so much fun while watching it. And I just like that Tom McLaughlin made a fun return to Camp Crystal Lake, now Camp Forest Green, and there's actually kids in the movie. I think this is the first in the series that actually had kids in the movie. It's a camp. Why not have kids? It's a camp that's very windy, rainy, and cold, which is strange. But I do love this movie. It's so much fun.
Yeah, you know, I was remarking once on Tom McLaughlin. It's a shame he kind of, like, after Jason Lives, he really just kind of went on to a lot of TV movies. You can find a lot of his sensibilities in, One Dark Night, which was the first film he directed. You can see where he was going there. I'd be interested in seeing him come back to do some kind of a horror film again, a lot like Jason Lives. But
it's funny you should mention that, because he's actually working on doing not sort of a remake, but sort of of One Dark Night. I'm a huge fan of One Dark Night, by the way, and actually this has gone out to Mr. McLaughlin himself, and my good friend Quentin knows him, and he told him that how much of a fan I was of that movie, and I always talk about it on my podcast and blog and so on, and so somewhere out there Tom knows about me, which is kind of fun to know. But he's doing an actual kind of a remake of his own movie, because it was his first movie, and there were things about it that he liked and things about it he didn't like, and that he couldn't film because it was such a low budget movie. I think it was like a $500,000 movie, so it was really cheap to make. So he's going back to horror, and he's going to make One Dark Night again, hopefully, within the next couple of years or so. So I hope he does, because I think he really does belong in horror. That guy, you could tell how much he loves the genre by watching a movie like Friday 13th Part 6, because there's so many nods to horror movies of past. So I hope he gets back to that. I love Tom. Both Toms.
That would be interesting to see, but Eric.
Hmm? Yes,
your turn.
Yeah. This was actually, Jason Lives was the very first Friday the 13th movie I saw, because when I was getting into horror and slasher movie cinema, it had just been released on VHS. And I suppose what made me go for Justin Lives, oops, Freudian slip.
Eric.
I can't get you off my mind, Justin. You're so dreamy.
Oh, Eric.
What made me
you want whore!
What made me want to watch Jason Lives
first? Is Eric breaking up for anyone else?
No.
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 I'm breaking up with Justin, though.
I know. You can take my ring and shove it.
Okay. I can't even remember where I was going. Yes, what made me decide to go first with Jason Lives and not bother with the first five was that the artwork was just so striking to me. I love the poster image of the hockey mask with the moonlight coming through the holes and then the tombstone in front with Jason Lives inscribed on it. I had a look in the back and there was that famous still of Jason standing on top of the overturned Winnebago. And I thought, I have to see this right now. So I didn't bother watching parts 1 to 5 first. So that's why I went straight for 6. And I absolutely loved it. It delivered everything. Was one of those rare things I had where I went to a video shop and imagined what the film was like by looking at the sleeve, and it turned out to be even better than I anticipated. It was perfect popcorn horror, and I think it's the one entry in the franchise that I would think would play best in a sort of multiplex environment, even though when we get into background, we know that it didn't do terribly well at the cinemas. So what I did in the end was I borrowed a neighbor's video recorder, and you'll have to forgive me for this, and I made a dupe copy of Jason Lives.
Oh, Eric.
I know. And I actually was on the same cassette as same VHS cassette as Halloween 2. So that was one of my favorite tapes in my collection. But I watched Jason Lives maybe, 50,000 times, even more than Dirty Dancing. So I've reached the point now where I can't really enjoy the film anymore. And I think this is something you touched on, Justin, when we did Nightmare on Elm Street. You were saying it's difficult to enjoy the movie now because you're just over familiar with it. Mm. But I can still see watching it what it is that I loved about the film. I love the atmosphere of the opening sequence set in the graveyard. There's loads of horror cliches in there. The thunder, the lightning, the wind, the gravestones, the zombie like Jason coming out of the grave. All that stuff is absolutely brilliant. Very well done. I sometimes have a problem with humor in horror films, but I think it's perfectly pitched in this. The only issue I'd have is with Roy, the paintball nerd. I feel his inclusion and then the music that accompanies him, which is kind of this jokey military music, it's kind of steps into Police Academy territory for a few minutes while he's on screen and it feels very out of place. But apart from that, the humor in it, I think, works really well. And it's interesting. I was just thinking, this is one of the few Friday the 13th films that's actually set as a summer camp, because it's known as this summer camp set series. But if you think about it, only parts 1, 2, and 6 are set in a summer camp. And this is the only one, of course, that has children in it. But I don't know about you guys. I never felt the kids were in any danger at all. I mean, the film feels kind of, even though there are violent sequences, the film feels kind of safe. And, I never felt there was any tension with the kids being there. In fact, they could have been taken out of the plot for all I care. I don't think they served any purpose, to be honest. The cast are really likable in this one. People are saying, I can't even think of the word I'm looking for, but the cast of part 5, you think of people like Ethel and Junior and, Debbie C. Voorhees' character, and they're all quite, that is harsh edge to them. But this one, they're really likable characters. Jennifer Cook is great as Megan, I think. And I love the secondary characters, Court and Nikki and Sissy.
Nikki.
I was talking to Joseph about this last night on Facebook, is that the music and it's probably the first one that has a proper music soundtrack, as in it has, I think it's 3 or 4 Alice Cooper songs. And of course, Felony are back from their stint on Graduation Day to provide a song called I'm No Animal, which is the one that Nikki is banging to. I wasn't a fan of these songs back in the day, but listening back to them this week, I thought they were fantastic. I mean, I'm not an Alice Cooper fan. I'm not what you would call a hard rock fan, but I think the music is great. So it's a movie I completely loved for a very, very long time, but I think I watched it one time too many. And now I can see exactly what I loved about it, but I just find it difficult to sit through because I'm just so overly familiar with it, I'm afraid. No, it's difficult. It's an 8 out of 10 movie for me, but I just don't like watching it anymore because I'm too familiar with it.
Nikki.
Yes.
Nikki. Darcy.
Is that okay? Imagine the final sequence of Long Good Friday, and that's my equivalent of the Nikki scene.
So were you like that, say, like in Rush Week when that photographer, that big burly photographer, were you like that?
Hell yeah.
Or like Nail Gun Massacre with the Sheriff or something like that. Nathan.
Oh, Friday the 13th Part 6 is awesome. I mean, it's an amazing film. I will say it's not my favorite out of the first seven Friday the 13ths. It's actually probably one of my least favorites out of the first seven, but it's still a 10 out of 10. So, yay. I mean, even my least favorite out of the first seven is way better than other movies, I would say, you know, out there. I mean, I you guys were saying, the characters are really likable. I really love Paula, and I actually felt kind of bad when, you know, she gets killed, and her death is really violent. You know, Paula's death is definitely probably one of the more violent ones in the movie, I thought.
It's really bloody.
Yeah, blood all over the walls. And I actually liked her bond, I guess, with the little girl, you know, and I think it's kind of interesting because I would think in another slasher movie, a character like Paula would definitely be painted to be the final girl. I mean, she's
totally, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely like, you know, nice and bonds with the kids. And Megan's the party girl. So you would kind of expect her to definitely be, you know, killed, I'd say. Which I'd say I love Megan. You know, I thought that she was a really fun heroine. And. You know, I kind of agree with what Joseph was saying earlier. You know, I wish Megan had had at least like somewhat of a chase sequence. That's kind of the one thing I was missing in this one. I would love to have had like a big chase like we have in every other Friday the 13th movie. I mean, I love the formula of a Friday the 13th film, and that includes the big chase scene. But I don't feel really got that. Yeah.
Car chase.
But that's not as much fun.
Yeah, but there wasn't a car chase up until this movie, so I thought it was kind of different.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but I mean, Megan does, you know, she does, you know, I'd say kind of pull her weight as the final girl. She doesn't, like, leave Tommy to do it all. I mean, she made good use of that motor on the boat.
Motorboat.
But, I mean, I kind of agree with what you guys have said. The movie's just all around fun. I don't think it's boring. It's just a fun film, you know. I mean, what else can I say? I love it. I love the scene where Jason throws the knife and hits the cop in the head with it. That just kind of was so sudden. So that was
yes. I'd say speaking of like, I'd say speaking of violent death scenes, I thought the sheriff got it pretty bad, being bent in half backwards like that.
Oh right, but, that's true. I mean, I kind of, you know, I did like the sheriff, you know, towards the end. I mean, because he's kind of annoying during the beginning because they just like they won't listen to Tommy at all, and that just drives me crazy when they won't listen. But I also have to say, though, I love the soundtrack. And I mean the rock songs and Harry Manfredini's soundtrack. Because I'll admit, you know, I'm not the biggest Harry Manfredini fan. And I think I've talked about that before. But in this film, I love what he does with the soundtrack in this film. Especially the scene, I guess, where Tommy is on the phone. You know, at the phone booth. The music that plays during that scene is really, really good. So kudos for that.
Okay, Justin.
Well, a lot's been said already, and I would agree with most of it, although I probably am more on the side, siding with Meep on this. In fact, I think Jason Lives, definitely I prefer it to Part 5 a lot. Although I've warmed to Part 5, I think Part 6 is a much better film. Much more professional film and also a much more entertaining film as far as I'm concerned. Well, it's just my opinion. But I think parts 1 to 4, you know, are peerless, really. I mean, they are the essential Friday 13th films, and everything that came after it were really twists on that. But part 6 I love. I mean, I think, as Eric said, it does the humour, but it's really, although it's broadly done, but it's deftly done. And I think Tom McLoughlin said that Frank Mancuso Jr. said that you can do anything apart from make fun of Jason. And I think if they'd made fun of Jason in this film, it would have ruined it. And so that's why it's got the perfect mix. I mean, it's just very witty. I mean, it is the first film, well, arguably... Evil Laugh from, was that 85 or was that 86? I can't remember. But that was another film that played with the horror movie conventions. But Jason Lives basically does what Scream did 10 years later, and Kevin Williamson obviously was inspired by this. I think he said as much. I love everything about it, really. I mean, it's the perfect popcorn horror movie, and I would love to have seen it on the big screen, and I think it'd work really, really well now. Tom Matthews and Jennifer Cook have got great chemistry. They're great characters. I think Tom Matthews is a much more charismatic Tommy than the one, you know, what's his name from Part 5?
John Shepherd.
John Shepherd. He's much Agreed. More... I'm glad John Shepherd didn't come back, because he had a face like a slapped ass all the way through, whereas yeah. Whereas Tom Matthews is very handsome and charismatic.
I knew it would come to that. Yeah. Well, so shallow.
Oh, come on, Eric. You've just been, I think you're talking, salivating over some, you know, hefty gardener in, I don't know, wherever it was. But I digress. Some of it's a bit, you know, it's just very playful, all the stuff about, you know, what now it's done, been done a million times, but, you know, they throw away little things like talk about Cunningham Road and call the station up in Carpenter, that type of thing. And, the stuff about the Tom McLaughlin's wife, who played the camp counselor, who, you know, that whole thing is, I've seen enough horror movies to know if you see someone standing in the middle of the road wearing a mask, he isn't like to be friendly, you know, to paraphrase. Things like that all work within the context, and the opening scene is so well done, you know, and it is, as Meep was saying, going back to the Universal horrors, and this idea of bringing Jason back with a lightning bolt, which is patently ridiculous, but then no more ridiculous than Frankenstein or, you know, any of the Universal horrors, really. So once you get past that point and you suspend disbelief, then the rest of the movie is a dream, really. It also satisfies everything that you would want from a Friday the 13th movie, although it definitely takes steps back as far as nudity and the gore. Now, I think they were quite clever at that point by doing murder scenes which were so outlandish that that they could do them, like the pushing Darcy Moss's face through the side of the van. And there's nothing really there to cut, is there? Because the way they work around it, it was very clever, although we know the film was cut quite heavily anyway. I really like it. I think it just works, you know, it's a perfect Friday 13th sequel, whereas I don't think Friday 13th Part 5 is a good Friday 13th sequel. I think it's a fun slash movie, but it's not a good Friday 13th film, but I think Jason Lives is. So that's my penny.
I think for me, what makes the humor work is, as you say, they don't make fun of Jason. Jason doesn't like slip in a banana skin or do something stupid like that. And also, when characters are in peril, they don't say or do something quote funny, which is a problem. Like when you get up to Jason X, there's a scene in that where somebody is being sucked out of an airlock or something, and she says, "Ooh, this sucks on so many levels." That's where humor and horror don't mix for me. It's the way it works in Jason Lives. It's like the 80s action movies where you might have Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, giving one of his one-liners, but it doesn't disrupt sort of the flow of the action. And that's how I feel it works in Jason Lives as well.
Did anyone notice in the opening graveyard sequence when Tommy and Hawes are digging up Jason, when they do a close-up of Jason, he's got the maggots all over his face. If you watch, one of the maggots actually falls, but if he's laying down, it should not be doing that. So obviously the stuntman was standing up. I always thought that was a fun little kind of a catch it moment.
There's also another blooper in that graveyard scene, because when the camera's panning across, you can see Justin and his friends having a little graveyard midnight party in the background.
I was wondering when you were going to get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my cameo. It's my claim to fame.
I thought it was a blooper. Sorry, you were actually paid to be there, were you?
Yeah. Well, you probably mistook my hair for a bush.
Yeah.
There isn't nudity in this movie, but does anyone remember the Sissy character and her suspenders and sweatpants?
Yes. She has
these She has these suspenders attached to sweatpants, and they're hiked so high that there's some serious camel toe action going on in this movie.
Not something I noticed.
I did.
So that came close to nudity for me.
Yeah.
Especially in 1986.
Darcy DeMoss was originally cast in part five, but, mm-hmm. you know, she turned it down because the director was kind of a cokehead pervert. And,
yeah,
you know,
she was supposed to play Debbie Sue Voorhees' role, which is the big super-duper nudie scene.
And, you know, she said she didn't have a problem with nudity if they discussed it, but, you know, he just threw her into the kind of into the pool and said, swim, sink or swim. You know, she didn't discuss it with her, you know, and Tom McLaughlin was like a lot better with her, you know, basically treating her with more respect. And unfortunately, she did not get nude, but oh, God, she's still. Yeah.
You know, she was meant to get nude. That was why she was hired. And Tom McLaughlin was told to ask her to be topless in the scene. And he didn't really want to do a topless scene. So he asked her quite half-heartedly, and she said no. And so they didn't do it topless. But apparently she was meant to be topless in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think dancing on a guy in bed is a good substitute if you're not going to have nudity.
Yeah.
It definitely struck a chord with me.
Yeah, and Nathan brought up a good point on in our private conversations yesterday about what mix of I'm No Animal by Felony are they listening to? Because it's only a 3.5-minute pop song. And she says there's another 10 minutes left in it. They must be listening to some outrageous disco club edit or something.
It's on the LP, the B-side.
The LP version, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what other slasher movie, you know, would have a reference to Jean-Paul Sartre in it?
And, you know,
Pieces?
Did it?
I don't know. I'm just making it up.
What makes me mad is that she's having sex with a one pump chump. I would have rocked that Casbah, baby.
Well, you really are getting hot over Darcy DeMoss.
Yeah. I have to. I'm with him though. She's my favorite Can't Buy Me slut as well. Can't Buy Me love slut as well.
Oh yeah, I love her. You've never seen a titty quite this pretty.
Have her boobies come out in any film?
I don't think so.
No.
I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
She did some.
Well, you
do
see
stuff,
her, you know, her. I'd say her butt in Return to Har Ha.
Oh yeah,
there.
A classic.
Yes.
So, Friday 13th, Part 6. Were you disappointed with the gore or the lack of gore in the film, especially the triple decapitation, which I watched the, I think it's from 2009, I think it was the special editions that were put out by Paramount, and for once they actually did a really decent job with the special edition, the extras on these. I think it's Daniel Farren's, wasn't it? He did the extras. And Friday 13th Part 6 has got some really good extras. I really like the kind of the faux documentary looking at you know, interviewing people about as if Friday 13th Part 6 was a real film, and they were interviewing people at Camp Crystal Lake, including the little girl grown up. Have you watched that?
I watched it when I first got the DVD, but I haven't watched it since. So I know the extras you mean. I think they're on all of the deluxe editions. There's always
right. Yeah, because it's Tom McLaughlin says that one of the people who did special effects for the triple decapitation, it was very, very elaborately put together. And then when you actually see it, it's actually very underwhelming. And I remember the coverage, I think it's in Fangoria, said that they shot three gore scenes for each gore scene. They shot three versions. One was a PG-13, one was an R, and one was an X. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. Because certainly some of the DVD, is they've got deleted scenes, and they're quite sort of bad VHS version of it, so it's quite muddy looking. But appropriately, in the scene where Tom McLaughlin's wife gets killed, there's just a little bit of blood that comes out into the muddy puddle, and you're just thinking, really? Would the MPAA have cut that? And probably they would have insisted on that being cut. But, you know, it's how ridiculous when you think now what you can get away with on The Walking Dead on TV. and back in 1986, a little bit of blood in the muddy puddle was beyond the pale. It's
When I watched this film, I wasn't aware that really that there was much, cut out of the film. In retrospect, I don't think it harms the film at all. I think when we get to part seven, I think the censorship cuts really do harm the film. But we'll get onto that next month.
Yes. Yeah.
I think what they did, I would like to see the more elaborate death scenes, but the way they edited the cuts don't seem like they're not distracting as they are in, say, part seven, where, they focus a lot on the brutality of the deaths in that film, and they're all, cut to shreds. Here, I think the editing kind of works where it's not, totally distracting. So.
No, well, fair enough. It's interesting, isn't it, for a film series that the raison d'être of the whole point of the first film was the incredibly gory special effects, and you couldn't believe what you were seeing, that you get to a point now where, that's been so censored, and in part seven, that it's the fact that there's still what's left is entertaining is testament to their longevity and why the films have lasted so long, I think.
Did they cut out a subplot where the kids were revealed to be supernatural?
Because
if you look at the movie, when the counselors are telling the kids to hide, there's a scene where the kids go under their beds, but the way they go under their beds, they kind of dive and almost fly under their beds. It's really weird. it looks actually like it could be supernatural. It's really weird. Check it out.
I think the kids were probably just so pumped to be in a Friday 13th movie, weren't they? They're all kind of super fast.
I can't believe I've watched this film so many times. I've missed the camel toe and the flying kids.
I've seen this one a lot, as you could tell. Big fan.
It's a very, very fun movie. And I think I think we're about to, well, not peak exactly, but when we get onto, as it's termed, is Friday the 13th, the next one, I think it's downhill pretty much from there, isn't it?
It's downhill from here, if you ask me, but...
Well, there you go. Okay.
You'll find out next month, because we will have another Friday the 13th next month.
And Jason Takes Manhattan at some point later in the year as well. So it is going to be, and then we're going to be really onto the dregs.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it'll be interesting anyway to talk about them. But have we got anything left to say at the moment, apart from before we go on to some behind the scenes?
Nikki.
Oh, well, okay. Well, in that case, let's go on to some behind the scenes. Who would like to go first?
Well, I will.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I don't have anything.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I could throw some things in there if you want.
Yeah.
So this movie opened up at number 2 at the box office, which was a first for the Friday the 13th series. But it was a success in a way, because it did go on to make $19 million. Now, if you look at it in the broad spectrum of 1986, which wasn't a kind year for horror movies, it was the number 2 horror movie of the year after Poltergeist 2. So that's not too bad, even though it didn't return as much as the previous Friday the 13th films up until that point. But it did open up against Howard the Duck, which obviously is a classic, Nothing in Common and Fly the Navigator, and a little movie called Choke Canyon, which I was the only person to see in the movie theater. And I think Aliens at the time was the number 1 movie, so it was kind of hard to beat Aliens. I think other tidbits. this movie wasn't screened for critics, so... of course, that pissed them off, and I think when critics are not screen movies, they usually just write it a bad review anyway, so critics obviously hated this movie. I mean, they hated the previous movies as well, but I think they didn't see a lot of the details that some of us fans see in this movie. They kind of overlooked it, which is kind of sad, so makes me sad. Also, Tom McLaughlin, who directed the movie, obviously, he met his wife, Nancy, on a horror movie, The Prophecy, actually, from 1979. He actually played the monster of that movie because he had a background in being a mime. And so I guess that worked well for playing a creature. And so they met that way, which is kind of interesting. They met in a horror movie, and they make horror movies together. And that's all I have.
Well, thank you, Meep. Nathan, do you have anything for us?
No.
Thank you, Meep. Thank you, Nathan, sorry. Eric, how about you?
Yes, I have a few things. As usual with Friday the 13th, we tend not to go into too much detail because, you know, there's about 15 million documentaries out there and there's books and everything. But filming for this commenced in early February 1986 in Covington in Georgia, which is a neighboring state to Tennessee. So it's in sort of... kind of in Nathan and Joseph's neck of the woods.
No, it's not.
Why is it not?
Georgia's like four states over.
Is it? I look on the map. I thought it was neighboring to Tennessee. No,
it is.
Stop contradicting me, you fiend.
It's south of us, so
yeah. Well, it was shot there for 6 weeks under the title Aladdin Sane, which was a continuation of using David Bowie songs as pseudonyms for. When they were filming. Dan Bradley was the original Jason Voorhees in the film. Paramount Pictures thought he was a bit too rotund, meaning that he'd be somebody I'd like, I think. And he was replaced by CJ Graham, but he's still in the film. He does all the paintball sequences in the woods are with the alternate Jason, Dan Bradley. Apparently he was very, very unhappy about being sacked because on the Crystal Lake Memories documentary Blu-ray, Peter Brackey says that he tried to contact Dan Bradley to do an interview, and basically he just slammed the phone down when he heard it was about Friday the 13th Part 6. So he doesn't like talking about it, but he's had a hugely successful career as a stunt coordinator since then, and he directed the lackluster, although I haven't seen it, the unsuccessful remake to Red Dawn in 2012. Haven't seen it, as I said, but it's supposed to be absolute pants. There was an alternate ending where Jason's father was supposed to appear. The caretaker was supposed to survive the film, and Jason's father is paying him to sort of tend to Jason's grave. And I think that was kind of to be like a Man in Black in Halloween 5 kind of set up to give them a character to focus on in future sequels. But Paramount said, no, we're not going to do that. And I'm kind of glad they did, because of, you know, we all saw what happened with that stupid Man in Black idea at the end of Halloween 5. As Meep was saying, it failed to make number one. It was the first entry in the series not to make number one. It debuted at number two behind Aliens. 1986 was considered quite a good year for horror because both The Fly and Aliens came out that year, which were critical and commercial successes. But also, if you're a real horror enthusiast, I know, Nathan, you probably would have enjoyed seeing Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 that summer. Psycho 3 came out, which is a film I quite like. Vamp, I love, with Grace Jones. Poltergeist 2, we mentioned earlier. I love that movie. So yeah, 1986 was kind of a good year for horror fans, even though a lot of them didn't make huge amounts of money. Tom McLaughlin in, I think you were referencing this Fangoria article from September 1986 earlier, Justin, but he was saying about the Paramount forced him out of sticking Jason's father in at the end of the film because they feared it might be a misstep for future sequels. But Tom Matthews, in a couple of issues later, was talking about Friday the 13th Part 6 and how he was cast. He'd seen Parts 1 to 4. He got cast in Part 6. Then before he started filming, he watched Part 5 and he thought, oh, Jesus Christ, what have I done? Because he thought its production values and direction were really bad, and overall it came across as a third-rate film. But his final thoughts on the film were, hey, in 2 years, nobody's going to give a shit about that I was in this film. And, you know, here we are 29 years later talking about Friday the 13th Part 6. And that's really all the background I have. So over to you, Justin.
Okay. Well, as you say, we don't tend to go into a massive amount of background for these films, only because, like you say, there's so much out there. And if anything, we'd rather spend the time looking into some of the background of films that other people perhaps aren't looking into. But so with that in mind, I dug up some reviews from the time, so I've got a few quotes from those. But one thing I would mention, reference to of other slasher movies, is Rennie Jones as Sissy Baker. She was also in Deadly Lessons, the TV slasher movie from 1983. So if you've seen that, has everyone seen Deadly Lessons?
No.
No. I keep trying to, but everything goes wrong. Something goes wrong with the copy I get usually.
Okay. Okay. It's not an amazing film, but it's quite, to actually see a TV slash a movie, it's quite entertaining. So, I've just got a few quotes from reviews. This is from Karen James from the New York Times. He says, but despite a few lighter touches, the film is still a gory waste of time that plays its murders for all the blood and guts they're worth. There are plenty of cliched reaction shots of faces in terror, more than enough frames filled with bloody knives and severed heads. There is not, however, any suspense about Jason or his victims. He stalks, they scream, he kills. None of it is enough to make you jump out of your seat, though it may be enough to make your stomach churn. Now, I actually thought the film was actually quite suspenseful, but there you go. What do I know? The Orange County Register on August the 5th, 1986, said, despite a few lighter touches, the film is still a gory waste of time that plays its murders for all the blood and guts they're worth. There are plenty of cliche reaction shots of face in terror, more than enough frames filled with bloody knives and severed heads.
Have you not just said this?
I thought I had said that.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Oh, ignore me. Sorry. It's on my iPad. So anyway, it's funny.
Yeah,
no, that's plagiarism.
In your bloodstream as well. If it sounds
that's
good.
Plagiarism for you, Eric. That's what it was. So he's copied the review. So ignore that anyway. But there was one positive review I did find, and this is from Casey Sanchez from the Santa Fe Reporter of 6th of August 1986. And said, I do enjoy watching teenagers get murdered. You do too. Otherwise, this Paramount series, which began in 1980, couldn't have taken an accumulative $69.1 million at the box office so far. Writer-director Tom McLaughlin, One Dark Night, has crafted a less gruesome, more suspenseful work, brighter and harder-edged than its predecessors. It's the first of the series to be based wholly in the supernatural, with Jason being reanimated by a lightning bolt a la Frankenstein. There's plenty of sly humour, and for once, there's no nudity or drug use in the film, with the deaths no longer punishment for wicked teenage excess. Yes, there are 17 killings, bringing the six-film body count up to 80, yet McLaughlin brings new life to the old killer. He's the series' much-needed lightning bolt. So at least there was one person out there who liked it. But our old friend Dan Geyer, the last one I'm going to read out from the Derry Herald, who I don't remember, I probably mentioned this before, but when I was doing the publicity for Teenage Wasteland or Slash Movie Uncut, he contacted me for an interview, this guy. And when I looked back at all his old reviews, he hated slasher movies. So this is what he said about Jason Lives. He said, it had to happen sooner or later that the ridiculous Hack 'em Up Friday 13th series would begin for the story to go going about parodying itself. You could argue that all these masked mad slasher movies are a big joke on what film-going audiences consider entertainment, in quotes. But no, six in a series, Jason Lives no longer goes for jugular with serious, scary intent. Jason Voorhees become such a known eradicator of promiscuous teenagers that he's in danger of evolving into a comic figure, much like the monster in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Which, to be honest, it's actually a glowing review from Mr. Geyer, because he basically hated every slash movie. So when he interviewed me about it, I mentioned to him, I said, have you warmed to these after all these years? And he just said, no, but thanks for asking. So there you go. But it just goes to show, it's always worth being reminded that these films were still seen by mainstream critics, as Meep said, as, you know, the lowest of the low, really. And the Friday 13th series enraged critics because they were probably the archetypical critic-proof horror movie. In fact, most horror movies are critic-proof, aren't they, famously. But the Friday 13th series, I think, was, it didn't matter what they threw at them. People still went to see them, and that kind of really annoyed critics, and which is always quite nice.
I do remember in a lot of these horror slasher films, you know, a lot of big stars get their start in movies like this. And then, you know, later in life, they denounce them. But I do remember, I don't remember what TV show it was on or even if it was a magazine, but I do remember specifically someone asked Tony Goldwyn, who actually went on to
become quite famous and have a big career, you know, what he thought of Friday the 13th Part 6, because it was like, you know, his earliest role, and he said, you know, he had fond memories of working on the film, and he actually watched it with, I think it was his nephew or his daughter, like, recently, and he said he actually had a lot of fun with it, and it's one of the better in the series. So it's always good when, like, some... you know, quote unquote, big celebrity who was like in a, you know, had a small role in a horror film actually goes back and appreciates something they did like that. Whereas a lot of celebrities were just kind of like, oh, I just did that just for the paycheck.
Mm. Good for him.
Yeah. Well, it's actually interesting, isn't it? A lot of the films, you know, a lot of the people in the films, they seem to warm to them, didn't they? In later years, because of the documentary, what's the name of that? Exhaustive documentary,
Crystal Lake Memories.
Oh, that's the one. Yes, do we know? Because there was supposed to be sort of like a bit of a Christian theme running through this, wasn't there? Do you read about that?
Yes. No. Yes.
Yeah.
I think the little girl in the movie, I think she prays to God a lot in the movie, but they kind of cut some of that out.
Yeah. Because, you know, yeah. They still got a bit in there, isn't it, when she's she kind of closes her eyes and prays, and then Jason goes off because he's about to kill her. Mm-hmm. Or, you know,
he's not listening, sweetheart.
but interestingly, I don't know because I don't know if Tom McLaughlin is a Christian filmmaker or something. But obviously, it's interesting, partly that the nudity. There wasn't many nudity in this, and the gore was toned down. But I did read that John Shepherd, as Tommy, was tempted to come back. He didn't like the hoo-ha over New Beginning, but he was tempted to come back. And one of the reasons was because of this scene with a little girl praying to God and being spared by Jason. But then he decided not to, and he went off to be a monk or whatever it was, or a priest. For a little while, but then he's interviewed, isn't he, on Crystal Lake Memories?
Yeah.
Mm. So he's kind of come to his senses and warmed to the series a bit more. So, yeah, I mean, back when these films were made, I mean, I think a lot of people saw this as either as a stepping stone in something bigger, or they did probably, you know, because of the way they were regarded by the industry and the critics, then you can probably see why a lot of them were a little bit worried about being associated with the films. But wasn't there was also, I think, wasn't there going to be originally the film was meant to carry on with Reggie and Melanie Kinnaman's character Pam from A New Beginning? The idea was to do a direct sequel, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they were supposed to be killed off early on, weren't they?
Yes. So kind of a la Alice in part two.
Mm. I'm glad they didn't do that.
No.
I was just waiting for that. She's dead, dead, dead.
I love Reggie the Reckless. Why would you kill him? That's so sad.
Yeah. Do we, talking just on a slight off things, but the have you heard about this project, The Survivors, with all the final girls?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard any more about it?
Someone mentioned that at Days of the Dead in 2011 or 2012. Yeah, we came up with this great idea. I'm like, yeah, Justin came up with that idea like 10 years ago. Why didn't it get made when he came up with the idea? So someone stole your idea, Justin.
I know. I'm waiting for the receipts when it comes through. But I'm just having a look, actually. They're just looking at their Facebook site. But the idea is getting all these kind of final girls and women from horror movies together. And the last thing they updated was from the 1st of February. So it still looks like they're still pressing ahead with things. But it's got some interesting people associated with it. So it could be a fun movie if it ever gets off the ground.
Are they supposed to be playing the same characters that they were in the movies that they were in? Or is it just like the actresses are getting together?
I don't know, is the honest answer. I mean, I'm interested in finding out more about it. But it's got, it's got people like, isn't it, Heather Langenkamp and Deborah Foreman and all sorts of people associated with it.
Okay. Imagine clear a lot of rights to do that, to get all the same characters.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I don't want them to, though. I want them to be just new characters, because I have issues with survivors from previous movies getting killed in sequels. I don't like it. So if this was like all the characters and they're getting killed off, I'm going to be very angry. So I hope they just use the actresses and not the characters.
And you wouldn't like Nathan when he's angry.
No, I turn into the horror version of the Hulk.
He's the Incredible Bulk.
Is that the I need the tumbleweed sound, don't I? Talking of which, actually, maybe this is time.
For, maybe it is.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Are we ready?
Oh boy.
So let's
Eric,
seek
please
into
make
it.
Me laugh. Please.
Oh, you will. You will. I guarantee it.
It's my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
What do people sing at Jason's birthday party? Voorhees a jolly good fellow. Voorhees a jolly good
fellow. That was a good one, Eric. Actually.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was not bad, actually. That wasn't bad. But you still have to have a...
I still made her cry.
I want to take credit for a good joke this week because I inspired him, I think, by me being on the podcast. Usually they're pretty terrible.
Yes, I think you've brought some good karma. And Eric's now, because we've gone through, what are we up to now? An hour and 45 minutes, and Eric hasn't threatened to kill himself. So so it's all good, isn't it?
It's all good. All is good in my world.
It's kind of like the end of Nightmare on Elm Street, isn't it? When they go out and everything's sunny and everything looks good. But then we all know it's going to go to...
We all know that Freddy's going to pull that mannequin through the door window.
Yes. So, okay. Well, that was Friday the 13th, part 6.
Just one thing to add. Back in the day, and Justin, you probably remember this, there was a huge delay. When films would get released in the States, sometimes it could take a long time for them to appear over in the UK and Ireland. Mm. I have a clipping here from my local newspaper. I grew up in a city called Kilkenny, which is, as I said before, is a town by your standards. And we got Friday the 13th, part 6, for 2 days in the cinema in October of 1987, which is 15 months later, after because it opened August the 1st in 1986 in the States. It actually, you could have gone to see Beverly Hills 2 during the evening, and then the late show was Friday the 13th, part 6. Actually, the tagline on it here is "Make a double date with hell." So I don't know what. Yeah, it's. I'm wondering if the image was pulled from a double bill it was doing.
Well, it was doing a double bill with April Fool's Day in the UK. Oh,
that's probably where they've taken this image from. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we had to wait 15 months for it to appear in the cinemas. So, thankfully, those days are gone.
Well, this is the last film, the Friday film, I think, that got released to cinemas in the UK.
Yeah, it is until Freddy vs. Jason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
They went straight to video after that.
Yes. 7, 8, 9, 10, all straight to video over here. Yeah. Mm.
So, okay. Well, that was Friday 13th, part 6. So, do we have any feedback?
Yay. Do we have any what?
Feedback.
Oh, no.
I have one.
Okay.
It's a very small one.
Okay.
The email, that is.
Oh, I thought it was your penis you were talking about.
Aware of
the shemale.
Shemale.
This is from Mike Alishan. He says, "Hi, everyone. This is directed more towards my fine podcast co-listeners. I believe this podcast has around 10,000 unique listeners minimum."
Where did he get that from?
Do we? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I thought it was more 10, like
if 10. If we all contributed $3 towards Gory graduation, then Nathan and Joseph would reach their goal. Come on, guys, let's get Gory. And thank you for the plug there, Mike. If everybody wants to contribute $3, great. It won't happen, but it'd be nice. But Mike is also he's also backed us a little bit, or more than a little bit, I should say. So thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Mike. I would like to
that's
think
all I have. So.
Okay. Well, thank you. I would like to think we had 10,000 visitors, but I somehow doubt it. Do we think we got 10,000?
Well, we have 441 likes on Facebook.
Yes.
Well, I think it's like, I think he's probably using like web stats to see how many he's like visited, like, you know, who's, you know, kind of perused us on iTunes or whatever. Like all that sneaky SEO bullshit or whatever it is. Well, who knows?
Well, we can build up to that. But yes, please do donate to Gory Graduation and let's get it made. Otherwise, it's going to be a very short film, maybe.
About 5 minutes long.
5 minutes long, yeah. I haven't got any. Nathan, have you got any feedback?
No.
No.
No. And Eric, you haven't. What about Meep? Have you got any feedback?
Just.
Okay. Well, that's good.
That's it.
I've got a couple of little bits off the Hysteria Continues Facebook page. What? Little bits?
You got a couple of little bits.
That's not even funny, Eric, is it?
It is. Thank you, Eric.
This is from Soren Feltfoss Thompson, which I don't think I've said his name correctly, but he says, "Hey guys, please, please, please consider covering William Girdler's Grizzly. It is an absolute cheese-tastic, and it would be great to hear what you think about it. You covered Predator, so it shouldn't be too much of a stretch." And I actually got back to him and said, well, maybe you could do that with a double bill with Jaws 2.
If we were going to look at
Nature Runs Amok slasher kind of hybrid, or certainly with slasher leanings. They're certainly not slasher movies, but would you consider doing Grizzly and Jaws 2? Double bill?
Yeah. I would say with the next film we're going to cover, then yeah, we could definitely cover Grizzly.
Definitely.
So okay.
If we cover Rabbit Grannies, then yes.
Would Eric
if we
like
cover
to
the sadist,
Grizzly?
Then yes.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to cover Grizzly with my... yeah.
I bet
Eric, it's the children's show.
I know. That's why I restrained myself from saying exactly what I was going
to
say.
You would like to cover Grizzly with what?
My man juice.
Oh dear.
With his picnic basket.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to something else, shall we? Before poor Meep. So going back to you were fast asleep, weren't you, Meep? And then you came and you saw the Facebook discussion thread that had been set up, private discussion thread with all sorts of terrible things that Eric had written. You've seen behind the curtain, haven't you? You've seen Eric's true self, haven't you?
I saw lots of things. I remember also you, Justin, being drooling a lot over a certain actor in this movie.
Ha ha!
That's not true. That was
everyone's
that was
guilty.
Yeah, we all know you love The Caretaker.
Yes, that's right. Mind you, we've not seen... Well, we have seen things that we cannot unsee that Eric has posted on there. And just count yourself lucky.
Michael's lucky he hasn't seen nude Eric.
Yes.
You'll be able to see that. When
I'm not even lying. We have seen Eric nude.
No, those pictures were censored.
They weren't, thankfully. They were censored,
not
thankfully.
Not enough.
Maybe it'll be like a slasher movie. I'll be the next victim and I'll see it.
Yes. Well, it's
just
like,
be grateful I haven't shown the picture of you. I haven't shown the picture of me to you, of me with my underpants pulled up really, really tight, so it looks like a thong, and I'm pulling a really sexy face and bending over by a sink.
Well,
would you like to see that picture?
No. But
Justin,
we have seen.
You still need to put Eric's giggle fit on the show.
That's right. Okay. Yes. Well, next week I shall do that. But the one is a bit like, you know, like the film The Ring. That once you've seen it, you die in 7 days.
And you've seen Eric's ring. It's quite in 2 days.
It's quite appropriate actually for the photo that Eric did show of his sofa, you know, like DFS sofa workshop shoot. I think we all know what we're talking about, Eric. But anyway,
let's
move on.
He's obsessed with me.
Yes,
so
absolutely obsessed. I can't, you know, I'm yes,
can't
I'm
have stopped talking the collar. About me.
Okay, well, let's stop talking about Eric. He's he doesn't like it. So
he's next to a window.
He's next to a window. Yes, yes.
I am next to a window.
Are you?
Yes.
It's not like we're trying to make you jump, Eric. Jump.
Well, sometimes it feels you are.
It'd be like the plot of a TV movie in the '70s, wouldn't it? A thriller. You know. What's the matter with poor Eric?
Yeah, I'm being bullied needlessly from all angles.
Well, again, Meep would have seen the truth behind that. It's funny how things switch around when you're off air, isn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I would describe you as a diva, but when we've been talking about slasher movies missing a bitchy character, then I think you filled that role quite nicely, Eric. Yes.
So you want to stand there and let him talk to me like that, Michael Ferrari?
I can't say otherwise. Can't help you. Sorry.
See, that's
there goes
what happens.
His love bead.
That's what happens when Eric gets too excited. His love beads go off. So, anyway, the last thing is something I found was Tristan André Comer asked us whether or not we considered Eric. Whether we considered Massacre at Central High from 1976 as a slasher flick. Nathan, you got back and said what to him?
I don't remember exactly what I said to him, but I said that for me, it's close enough. I mean, our collective idea of a slasher film is very broad. So, yeah.
I think when I first saw that film, I thought it was going to be a slasher movie.
Me too.
It's not really. Well, it is. I think, like you say, Nathan, it's got some bits. But of course, it's before Halloween, wasn't it? So there's lots of those films, like kind of proto slashers, that had elements which coalesced into, you know, the perfect diamond that is Halloween. But it's also got a Friday the 13th connection, hasn't it? Because it's got
Kimberly Beck
in it. Yes. So
yeah.
And did you also know that Alan Dale was in Neighbors?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
What was our one from last week? I can't remember.
Twins.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Twin cockroaches. Right. Well, have we got anything left to say, or we're coming up to the 2 hour mark, so it may be a good time to bow out. But we would like to say thank you very, very much, Meep, for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. But can you tell us where we can find you?
You could find me
down the docks.
Yes,
down the docks. Yes.
you could find my podcast, the Retro Movie Love Podcast. It's easy to find on the interweb, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on RetroMovieLove.com. I'm also on Facebook, Cinema du Meep. You look for me there. I post lots of retro movie stuff on there. So lots of love for the 70s and 80s coming from me and that buzzer. And that's pretty much it. And CinemaDuMeep.com. So check me out, and I'll check you out. I really want to check you out.
Well, there you go. It's a love fest all round. So thank you ever so much for coming on the show, and hope you'll be on again soon. So, yes, well, thank you for listening. Anything left to say? Oh, no, of course. Joseph, what is your controversial pick for next time?
Well, our next episode, we'll have another guest. Johnny's joining us again. He's been on the show a few times, but it is a controversial one. I try to do this every 30-ish episodes, but my pick is Rawhead Rex from 1986.
Ah, Tura Lura be gara be Jesus. You whore!
I like our controversial picks. I think they're fun.
Yes.
Well,
I mean, I know we kind of give each other a hard time over them, but I really do like them.
I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a divisive one. I haven't seen Rawhead Rex for a long time. I do remember some scene about somebody pissing.
Yeah, behind a bush.
Yes.
It's a pivotal plot point.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I think he was referencing the priest scene.
Oh, well, that's not as pivotal.
I can't remember. All I can remember is something of somebody pissing.
Are you sure it's the right movie you're thinking of?
It doesn't bode well.
Yeah, maybe you're thinking of one of your like Anal Paprika kind of movies or something.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen any of those because I've seen enough of Eric.
You haven't seen Eric's one?
No, not yet. It's banned in the UK. Yeah.
That picture that he was talking to us about, I think that was like the opening scene of it.
It was certainly opening of something. So, yes. Okay. Well, anyway, on that high note, we will see you next time for Rawhead Rex on Hysteria Continues. So thank you for listening. And see you again soon. Say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao. Yay, more Girl Scout cookies. They're crispy cookies layered with peanuts, peanut butter, and covered with chocolate penis coating. Yeah.
Covered with penis.
There are penis in there.
Wow.
Real penis.
Tastes cheesy.
I ran into some Girl Scouts who were selling cookies, and I thought it's appropriate since we're you know, doing a movie about a camp. So,
have they not seen Night of the Demon?
They've done interviews, I'm guessing, with the composer of Friday the 13th, and he does the whole, like, where the sound is supposed to be like kill ma, like ki 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 ma ma ma, but to me it always sounds like a ch.
I hear it as ch ch ch.
Yes, exactly. That's how I hear it.
Well, I thought maybe it was kind of like it was a nod to Female Trouble, and it was about Cha Cha heels.
Hey, did you get your Cha Cha heels for Christmas, Justin?
No.
Oh, I say through an Inga style tantrum.
There was the Christmas tree wasn't up for long.
I'll take you home again, Kathleen.